All right, so let's get started on this. Some people may be rolling in because of the change in time, but I'm going to do some book recommendations real quick. There are so many good books out there, but here's just a few. I'll start with this one. This is Josh McDowell, Why True Love Waits. This book is so overkill in a good way. Like, he has so much information in here. I think it's a great resource for adults and parents. I think most students, you'd be like, wait, this is way too much information. But there's all sorts of info about the cost of premarital sex, what it costs us in a bad way. But there's also some great information in the back that I'll talk a little bit about tomorrow. But it's a good, like, it's almost like a resource book that you kind of want to have on your shelf, you know, for the rest of your life. Because if you have kids someday and you're married, stuff like this can still be super helpful. It will be super helpful. Or if you are single the rest of your life and helping, not only engaging the struggle yourself, but helping others engage the struggle, it's a great resource. Ladies, this one's for you. Dana Gresh wrote this book called What Are You Waiting For? The One Thing No One Ever Tells You About Sex. It's a good book. In some ways, it's kind of like she took John Piper's idea of, you know, we were made for God, to know him, to desire him, and, like, applied it to the struggle that ladies have. Very good book. Encourage you to read it. My wife would recommend this to you. And then this one,
Who wrote that one?
Dana Gresh, G-R-E-S-H. What are you waiting for? And this one's, again, a Josh McDowell book. Like, have any of y'all ever heard Josh McDowell talk? Has he come to your school or anything like that? He's pretty old, but he's, like, trying to be super hip. And he just keeps writing books and all that kind of stuff. But this one's funny. The Bare Facts, B-A-R-E. 39 questions your parents hope you never ask about sex. So if your parents, like mine, have not had to talk with you, which I'm sorry, that hadn't happened. It should have happened a long time ago, and it should be an ongoing conversation, but that's between them and Jesus, not me. But if you, like, have a lot of questions and you're like a reading, you like to process things by reading, this is a good book that can just, you know, inform you biblically. It's from a biblical worldview. Question 25. Isn't it better if we live together first? I think that's a problem, or that's going on in our culture. Like, that's kind of the worldview of our culture. Like, yeah, we need to live together, see how things go, and then if we decide we'll get married, we'll get married. Definitely not the biblical worldview, but definitely the worldview we live in, so that's just one of those questions. Let's see what else. Hasn't modern medicine eliminated STDs and infections? True or false? False. It has not. Answer. Today, 1 in 4 sexually active teenagers is infected. Yeah. So that's the kind of stuff you can get out of that book. Highly encouraging. Just kidding. It's actually probably pretty depressing, just what's going on out there. Hey, y'all. The kitchen's available if you guys want to come back there. You want to come back to the kitchen? Come on. I'll stop talking, and we'll just stare at you awkwardly while you come down. I would play music, but it'd take me too long to find it. Walking down the aisle music. Some kind of dance for you. All right, so yeah, those were just, for those of you who came in, 3 recommendations. You can come look at these afterwards if you want to, if you're the kind of person who likes to have books in your hands. All right, so we're going to do some review and then jump into how the gospel really applies to the struggle. And I hope it'll be helpful. And again, if you guys have questions and I haven't answered them, or you're like hoping I'm going to get to it, chances are I may not. So either come talk to me or write a note down, or however way you want to communicate that to me, or just ask the question. Just feel free to raise your hand and ask the question. Okay? Fair enough? All right, let me pray for us as we get started. Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you that you have given us another opportunity to live in your world, and it is a world filled with wonders. And that's very, very apparent to our senses. We thank you for that, and we pray, Lord, that you would also make us very aware of our need for you. Lord, if left to ourselves, we make huge messes, and we have made huge messes, and yet you are at work right in the middle of it, and we thank you for that. And so help us to see your love for us today, and may it change us, may it help us, again, as I just keep praying for all of us, that we would engage the struggle with hope, with faith, and with love. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, so a little bit of review. I'm trying to simplify what we've been talking about. Day one, creation. Here's creation, simply put. We are hardwired for relationship, and we're hardwired for this desire of sexual intimacy. Okay. Yesterday we looked at the fall, and the fall has bent us to look to creation to satisfy what God Himself made us to be satisfied in. Okay. So we're bent that direction. Everybody under the sun who's ever been born, except for Jesus, is bent and looks to the creation, to the creature, for satisfaction. So we are bent that way. And so the question I left y'all with yesterday was, what practically does it look like to check ourselves, right? To abstain, as Paul says, from sexual immorality. And so let me just give you an example. I don't remember if it was this class or the second class. A question was raised. I think it was in the second class. A young lady raised her hand after some comments that I made and said, "So are you saying it's wrong to spend time with your boyfriend?" You know, from her perspective, the boyfriend. Or, you know, with your girlfriend. Is it wrong to spend time with them? Live question to you. Is it wrong to spend time with your boyfriend?
No.
I think that was a uniform no. Okay? That's what I said. I said, no, it's not wrong to spend time with your boyfriend. It's how you spend that time. Right? That's the issue. And I use the example. If your boyfriend calls you up and is like, "Hey, parents are going to the beach house for a week during the summer. You want to come with me?" Right? Your automatic answer, young lady, should be what?
Yes.
I love it. Exactly. Like, it's not a legalistic, like, no way. Right? There should be lots of questions that you have about that. Right? And I would almost think that your gut reaction should be, that's not a very healthy thing for me, right? Because what are we going to, you know, again, kind of what we were pushing into yesterday is, you are hardwired, if you spend time with someone that you enjoy being with, and they're of the opposite sex, you are hardwired, more than likely, to want to move closer together. And so if you spend a lot of time together, it's no wonder that you want to move towards sex. It's the way God made you, right? Did everybody got that, right? That makes sense, okay? So the question then for you in the struggle is, how are you spending your time? That's where you need to dig in. How are you spending that time? Are you willing to question things? Are you willing to say, "All right, you know, thanks for the invitation. What's that going to look like? Where am I staying? Are your parents there? Like, I mean, even like, what are your expectations? You know?" And I would hope that your daddy or your parents or whoever it is, guys or girls, if something like that, again, there's all sorts of situations here, right? That they're also engaged asking questions. They should be extremely concerned for you. Or your friends, right? I think I said it in the second class. Like, you need to have people in your life who are willing to hurt your feelings, right? Do you have anybody like that? Do you have, ladies, do you have a sister in the Lord or a friend who would be like, "That doesn't sound like it's going to end very well," you know? Like spending a week with your boyfriend at the beach, right? Is that going to go well? What's that going to look like? Might need your feelings hurt to say, "Hey, you should rethink that." Does that make sense? Any questions about that? Yes.
So we were having this conversation at lunch because we have kids in the second session, and they were telling us about this. So then we had a student whose question was, obviously you have people who hurt your feelings and say, "That's unwise probably for you to do that." So what are some practical ways that you would tell them to spend time with boyfriends and girlfriends?
Good. Well, let's make that a live question. What, did any of y'all discovered some practical ways to hang out with your opposite sex friends? What was that? Somebody said go to the zoo? Sure. Groups are great, right? Like, groups are great. I think groups are awesome. Like, hang out together in groups, right? Because Now, obviously, there are groups out there who, like, they're, I mean, do I have to go into the detail? But there are groups that are out there, and, you know, they're all, like, we don't care about, you know, there are groups out there who are like, let's all have sex together, right? Let's all do stuff together, maybe not actually have sex together, but parties and whatnot. Like, so, it, yeah, you need to, the kind of people you're hanging out with are important, but doing things with people who have like-minded, who desire the same thing, that's a good thing. Yeah. I had a girlfriend. I only had one girlfriend in high school. It's kind of a, yeah, that's a whole long story. Her parents did not care at all about her. Like, I would go over to her house, and we would watch a movie, and they would just disappear. I mean, and, like, we could have gone back to her bedroom and watched movies, and her parents would not check on us. I had this fear, like, I told you my parents didn't have sex talk with me. I kind of lied. They actually did, but it was through my brother. They told my brother, if you get a girl pregnant, I will kill you. That's what my dad said to him. And my brother passed that along. That was my sex talk. He passed that along to me. And so I had this fear, because my dad was a big guy. He was strong, lifted weights. His biceps are like the size of my head. I had a fear. And so, you know, out of fear, I basically kept my hands off of her. Okay. In fact, people, like, she probably thought I was weird and something wrong with me. But anyway. But that's a lot of the situations that you may find yourself in your relationship with someone of the opposite sex, is you may find their parents don't care and you have all this freedom, and you need to be wise about how you're spending your time. Is that helpful? Just one more comment, and this may really offend. How many of y'all are in a relationship with someone? Okay. I hear from other people that it can be really annoying if you're in a relationship with, like, your friends get annoyed by you being in a relationship with someone else. And they say something like this, right? And you help me understand. They say they're like a married couple. All right? Now, I'm not saying break up with your boyfriend, break up with your girlfriend, like, you shouldn't do that. But isn't it interesting that when you're 15, you pair off with someone and you spend a lot of time together, you look and act like a married couple. Why is that?
Because the example you have of your relationship is like your parents.
Yeah, and that's what we're made. We are hardwired to do that, right? And so again, I'm begging the question of you, like, it's not the right time. Like, you haven't made a covenant commitment to that woman, like, to be there, to die for her, physically, spiritually, emotionally. Ladies, you have not received that covenant promise. It's not the right time for that. And so I would encourage you, if you're in a, like, special relationship with someone, that you would kind of just rethink that. Like, what am I missing out on right now? That, and we're going to talk a little bit about it today. What am I communicating to my boyfriend or my girlfriend and to the world around me? Just a question. I'm not saying, please don't walk out of here like, Nate said you shouldn't have a boyfriend or a girlfriend. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that how you spend your time makes all the difference in the world. And how you process that with someone. Now, listen, you shouldn't process how you're spending your time together with your boyfriend or your girlfriend only. Because if you sit down and you're like, yeah, I feel like we're touching too much and kissing too much, and like, yeah, I know. You know, and you're dreamily talking about it, like, the conclusion of that is probably that you're going to end up doing more of that. Let's just be honest, okay? If that's where you are in your relationship. So, you need people outside of you again, or you're willing to hurt your feelings and be like, look, you're going down a road that is a good road, but you're not there time-wise. Like, you can't make that commitment. Like, you can't get married to this person, right? So, put on the brakes, rethink some things, back up. Okay, any other thoughts on that? Yes?
What about, like, spiritual intimacy?
Yes.
A way that, like, you should pray with, like, your boyfriend or your girlfriend, and I've heard you should pray with your boyfriend or your girlfriend. So there's a line there.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just apply what I said. Like, how is that going? Because... again, I would say that there's a, C.J. Mahaney is a pastor, and he's written some really good books, but he has one for husbands, and he says this, you should never touch your wife's body before you touch her heart. Okay? In other words, when, but he recognizes, like, right, ladies, you are not, and this is a generalization, are not by nature the sight and touch oriented first. Like, you have to be emotionally loved on and spiritually loved on before you're willing to kind of return that. And again, it's just generalization here, okay? Sorry, generalization, right? And so that prayer together, like, could really, for the woman, be like this huge intimacy building thing. And don't be surprised if you're praying with your boyfriend and all of a sudden you're like, I want to have sex with him. I'm just saying. Don't be surprised. Your body is like, hey, I want to move closer to you. Because you're building intimacy. But look, you may do that and that may not be the result, right? I'm not saying that's necessarily the result. But you need to check yourself. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Yes.
So you don't, like, obviously you don't want to be spiritual accountability partners in any way with your boyfriend
or girlfriend. Right.
So how, like, other than just, like, through example, like, how do you glorify God? Like, just, like, do y'all talk, I mean, should you be, like, talking about spiritual things, just but holding back to an extent about, like, what to share? Like, how do you recommend, like, spiritual conversations and, like, how often should that, like...
Yeah. No, I think spiritual conversations are great. Again, it's building intimacy, right? You're building a relationship with this person, and so again, what I'm saying is just be aware that the more you do that, probably the stronger the struggle is going to get because you're doing what God made you to do. I'm just going to keep saying that. I'm not saying y'all aren't hearing it, but I'm just going to keep repeating that. You're doing, when you spend time with someone of the opposite sex, and you're interested in each other, you like each other, and you're doing that kind of stuff, you're building intimacy. Does that make sense? And so there needs to be a healthy check by both of you of, like, how are you doing? You know, and then a healthy check by people who are going to be honest with you, because your significant other may not be very honest with you. Just an example, when Emily and I were engaged, we both lived in St. Louis, separate places, and we realized we were, like, fooling around way too much. And we would, like, have these conversations, like, we're going to do better, right? But we weren't having those conversations with anybody else. We were building lots of spiritual, emotional, even some physical intimacy, but it, you know, when it's just us, you just kind of conclude, yeah, we're not going to fool around tonight, you know, but we just spent all this time together, we eat dinner together at her place, and the struggle continues, right? We're not good at restraining ourselves. Maybe that's the best way to put it. Good question. So I'm not going to give you black and whites. You know what I mean? Like, because the Bible doesn't give us black and whites. In terms of, like, what should I do? Where's the map for what I should do relationally? But I think, like, just back to the kind of the big question asked yesterday, spend a lot of time in groups. Don't... Anything after, like, 10 p.m. alone somewhere in the dark, not a good idea. Just not a good idea. Right? All right. Let's jump into this. Let me just make one comment. All right. So I've talked a lot about, God made us male and female to be in relationship together. But one of the more beautiful things about the scriptures is there are a lot of single people in the Bible who never get married. Right? And you could come away, in one reading of the Bible, you can come away and say that, like, if you don't have a relationship with someone of the opposite sex and end up in marriage, that somehow you're less fulfilled as a human being. In fact, a lot of people struggle with that, thinking, like, oh, you know, I haven't found somebody, and I'm not, so because I'm not married or I haven't found someone, I'm not fully what I should be. And I think the Bible just cuts right through that and says that is not true. Who are our two greatest examples in the Bible of people who never got married?
Jesus.
Okay. Would we say that Jesus was not complete as a male, as a sexual male? Would we say he was incomplete because he never had a spouse? No. He was complete, perfect, right? And his, you know, some people will say, like, well, he didn't, his spouse, of course, is the church in a spiritual, emotional way. And so, you know, that's why he didn't have a real spouse on earth. But you can exercise your maleness or your femaleness in the way that God designed it and be single your whole life and not have sex. Right? Because remember, sex is the picture. It's a little picture. It's a little sign of ultimately our relationship with God. And so, if you don't have the sign, you still have God, and you'll still have that ultimate fulfillment as a male and a female for all eternity with Him. Does that make sense? So, you know, if like you're sitting in the class and you're like, yeah, I don't know, you know, you may sense already like the sense of like, I don't know if I'm getting married, I don't know if that's for me, you know, or something like that. You're not weird, right? There's not something wrong with you. Some people are given the gift and called to celibacy for their whole life. And their service to the church and to Jesus provides them a spousal-like love that we receive in marriage as well. Does that make sense? So I don't want to ostracize anybody, and I'm sure I've done that already, but try to cover some of the bases. All right, turn back to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And today we're going to just take a brief look in the scriptures and a really powerful little statement that Paul says. And we won't read the whole thing again, but I've reviewed. But look at verse 5 and 6. 1 Thessalonians 4, 5 and 6. And my goal today is for you to walk out of here with greater appreciation of Jesus' love for you. Because if you have a great appreciation of Jesus' love for you, you're going to love Him back, and you're going to love your neighbor. And by neighbor, I mean not only your friends, but your neighbor who is of the opposite sex who you're interested in. Or you're in a relationship with. Okay, verse 5, chapter 4. And Paul says, or go back. Each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness, honor. Verse 5, not in the passion of lust like the Gentiles who do not know God. And remember, that's the worldview that sex is everything, or sex is nothing. But that's the ultimate thing, and we have no guidance in that other than our own desires. Okay, Paul says that's a way of thinking that is very destructive. And here's how it's destructive. Verse 6, that no one transgress, or another word for that, defraud his brother in this matter, because the Lord is the avenger in all of these things. What does the word defraud or wrong mean to you when you hear that? Sorry, I'm looking up the definition here. I'm not checking my email.
Put someone off.
To put someone off? Okay.
Take advantage of
it. We're getting there. Yeah.
Cheat.
I'm sorry?
Cheat someone.
Cheat. Good. Good. All right. How is sexual immorality? So anything, you know, that big, it's a big basket term, right? How is sexual immorality cheating another person? Whether that's you're by yourself looking at pornography, you're fooling around, you're actually having sex, and you're not in a covenant marriage relationship, how is that cheating somebody else?
It's like cheating your potential spouse, I guess.
Okay, good. So there's this sense of like, okay, this is not your spouse, and who knows if it will be, but you're cheating your future spouse out of your whole heart, right? Out of your relationship with them. Because we, as sexual creatures, like when we have sex with someone else, like we bond to them. Les Newsom, who's like an RUF legend, used a great picture that it's like super glue. When you're sexually intimate with another person, you are bonded together like super glue. And it's like you like map each other, right? And that doesn't just come apart easily and have no effect. Does that make sense? What happens when you glue your finger together with super glue? What happens? You try to pull it apart? It's really hard. It's really, really hard to do, and then there's a lot of pain because the skin comes off. So that's a great picture, isn't it? Is it Josh McDowell would say the effects, we don't talk so much about the effect of sexual immorality, you know, we just hear a lot about it's great or it's wrong, but the effects of it are so deep upon your soul, upon your body, and because you've bonded. God, in that act, wants you to bond in an extremely awesome way. But then when you break it off and move on, it's extremely painful. All right, so what else? So you're cheating your potential spouse. What else? How else? Is there this defrauding of your brother?
Explain what that means, like planes or just...
Yeah, so how are you cheating? How are you taking something from someone else and using it for your selfish gain?
Our church did like this. This might be a little long, but like our church did this thing about pornography and things like for guys only. And they talked about how you'll, if you like see pornography, you'll take all these images of the women or men that you've seen, and you'll say, like, this is what the perfect body should look like, even though these people are paid to look good. It's like, it's fake, it's completely scripted,
yeah,
and like, none of it's real, and so you'll take all of these images and turn them, and think to yourself, this is what sex is like, or this is what they're going to look like.
Yes.
And when you actually have sex and you see this isn't what they look like, that can really turn people away, right, and make them go away from someone because they have put, like, they think that pornography is actual sex and what that's like, and then they compare it to real sex and it's nothing like it.
Yeah. So who's disappointed?
You.
Everybody, right? I mean, the sad reality of our generation and younger guys and girls is that because we have all of these expectations and ideas about sex formed from pornography, is that a lot of people aren't having relationships. Like, more and more people, I mean, it's funny and sad at the same time. Like, people are graduating from college and they're moving back home to their parents. And it's like, why is that? Well, because their expectation, they look around and see there's no way that my expectations can be met by anybody here because I've been formed by, you know, so whether guy or girl. If you do get in a relationship and you're filled with that, that's your worldview, your spouse is never going to measure up. And my wife, ladies, she would be here today and talking to you, she would say, that is awful. Like, she would say to you, if I have to compare to the Sports Illustrated swimsuit models, I'm dead last every time. I can never measure up. And she has to look at me and be like, if that's what you expect, we're done. Like, I can't measure up. It's not going to work, right? You can't. You can try. You can do the surgery. You can try. You can try. You can work out till, you know, you're green in the face. You can do everything under the sun. But guess what? It will never measure up. And so we need to be transformed, both. Guys and girls need to be transformed. Our worldview needs to be changed because we're cheating. We are cheating each other, right? Out of what God has good design for. Does that make sense? And we've all done it. We're doing it right now. And that's why we need to engage the struggle. We need to wake up and engage in it, right? So here's the good news, right? that we could go into all, if you think of other ways that we defraud our neighbor, you know, you think about those, what you said, it's scripted, pornography scripted, and those, you know, those ladies are acting. Did you know that the vast majority of them are like living slaves? The vast majority of men and women who are in pornography are like slaves. And if they try to exit, it's really hard. In fact, they can be threatened. Many of them are sex trafficked. They've been kidnapped from other countries and put and forced into that. Our support of that, ladies and gentlemen, when we get on and we click on that, even though you may not actually pay any money, you're supporting it. You're putting your dollar. You keep saying this is good and keep this going. And that should break our hearts. We're defrauding those people. And we all do it. We're doing it. And it's really sad. So, but here's the amazing good news, is that your Heavenly Father, look at it, verse 6. He said, no one transgressed and wronged his brother in this matter. And again, he is writing this to people who have probably done that, but they've come out of this Gentile way of thinking. They've found the love of Jesus. And Paul wants to warn them, the Lord is the avenger in all these things. If you wrong your brother, the Lord is the avenger in all these things. Now, we could take that as a very legalistic thing, that if you've messed up, God's boot heel is coming for you, right? And there is that sense of warning of, like, if we don't take our sexuality and the good gift of God that God has given us of sex and how we connect with one another, we don't take it seriously and we just blow it off the rest of our lives and we go around defrauding girl after girl or guy after guy, God's wrath is headed for you. Because that's how much He loves what He has made. He's so angry that we have trashed it, that we've corrupted it, right? His wrath. And how bad is it? How angry is He? He sent Jesus, a man, to live 33 years on earth to do the right thing sexually in his mind, his heart, and his body, and then get crushed for what I've done. Jesus became a fraud for me, for you. Isn't that crazy? Like, He became sexually immoral in my place. All the times that I have lied to my wife, that I have told her I'm not going to do this again, and I go do it, and I lie to her about it, He died for that sin. When I didn't treat her like I should have. Isn't that incredible? That's what I deserve. But I don't get that. I get instead His love. I get His presence and His forgiveness, and I get to try again. That's the best news. And the struggle is so beautiful because, listen, if you've blown it here at RYM, which I'm sure we all have in some measure, whatever the sin is, right? Isn't it amazing that you got to wake up today and you get to try again? One of my favorite movies, and I just recently, I don't watch a lot of movies, but my wife has been doing some work and she's been traveling, so when she goes out of town, it's like I catch up. And I've kind of been on a Tom Cruise bent. Sorry, I know that's probably like weird, but I don't have a man crush on him. I don't think I do. But the movies that he makes, a lot of them are kind of like interesting. But one of my favorite ones is Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah. Have y'all seen that?
That was great.
If you haven't seen it, okay, you need to see it. And I think this was not the intent of the movie. They didn't make this and go, this is going to show the gospel. But I loved it, and I won't try not to give it too much away, but basically there's this guy, and it's in the future, and aliens have attacked the Earth, and he kills a certain kind of alien, and it causes him to basically relive each day. Every time he dies, he comes back to life and gets to start over again. Right? And finally, they figure out how to, you know, save the day. And I won't go into details of that. But as I was watching the movie, I was like, that's the gospel. Like, every day, I go and I try and I map it out and I'm going to do better and better. And then I fail and I die. But then I wake up again the next day and get to start over. That's how rich God's grace. That's how, as John talked about last night, God exhausted all of the anger that He has for Nate Smith and my sexually immoral life, past, present, and future. He exhausted it on Jesus, so I will always have His smile and His embrace. He will never turn His back on me. He will never let me go. And He has been there throughout the entire struggle, loving me, patiently letting me be a jerk and an idiot and an adulterer and a whore. All of that to show me the depths of how much I need Him. And doggone it, I wish it would get better. I wish I could be done with it. Don't you? Don't you wish we could just snap our fingers and be done? But we don't know how bad it is. That's why we got to keep going. That's why the struggle is here, to show us how bad it is. So I have a 93-year-old grandfather, and he loves Jesus. He gets the gospel. And, you know, a lot of old people, when they get old, they just get crotchety, right? And they just think like it's their right to be bitter and like complain and make your life miserable if they feel like it, and they're not sorry about it. My grandfather is not like that. But if he does get crotchety and bitter, you know what? Within minutes, he is in tears. And you would think that he murdered somebody because he is so grieved that he got upset at his wife and got impatient with her. I'm like, Grandpa, you're 93. Like, what's the big deal? He's like, I have walked with Jesus for so long. How could I do that? I know his love for me. How could I do that? That's the struggle that we're in. And I hope that that's where I am at age 93, is that I'm so grieved by my sin that I, you know, quickly, I'm sorry. All right, there's the gospel. Got kind of emotional and loud and preachy. Sorry. I'm not really sorry, but do you see how that, like, that love that God has for you? Guess what? He has that for your neighbor. Girls, he has that for your boyfriend. Guys, he has that for your girlfriend. That's the kind of love he has. And in light of that, he says, don't defraud her. Don't cheat him or her. Don't manipulate him or her. Because you can. It's easy to do. You can play those games. You can act like you're in a marriage and totally manipulate your girlfriend or your boyfriend to get those things that you need to find in Jesus. Does that make sense? I know it's harsh. The Bible doesn't pull punches. The Lord wants us to know what we do and how we can struggle better. So I encourage you guys to think about that. It's not just about you. It's about people you don't know yet, your future spouse. It's about the people right here in this room. It's about the person you're in a relationship with. You've got to open your eyes to see that. God's given you incredible opportunities and incredible gifts. Let's not turn them and manipulate them. We do. What am I saying? Let's not. We do. That's why we need a Savior. So let's wake up and see His love for us. All right. Probably over time here. No, we got a little time. Got 5 minutes. Thoughts? Questions? Yes?
I was going to stretch.
You're just stretching.
Nate, did you have a question?
I'm just stretching.
This might be...
Is it Robbie?
Ronnie. Yeah. This might be a little off topic, and if you don't have a quick answer...
Yeah. No worries.
But before I got married, I noticed a lot of guys were looking at my wife, and I was thinking it was along what she was wearing. So I talked to her about it, and yep. it blew up. We ended up getting married anyway, but it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. I was dating her. I wanted to marry her. We would be married in like 5 months. But is that something you should talk to your girlfriend or boyfriend about? Like, if you notice the guys are all, you know.
Yeah. You know, I guess it just kind of depends. You know, that could go. It could go well, or it could go really bad.
It went really bad.
But it sounds like in it, like she was hurt by that. It wasn't like she was like, hey, well, let's have sex or something like that.
No, yeah.
Okay. I'm just saying, like the conversation like could go several ways. Like you could say that, and she could be completely touched that you have cared for her in that way.
I
does that make sense?
Yeah.
And because that's like ladies, ultimately, what you're looking for is for someone to say to you, you are unique. Amongst all of the women in the world, you are unique, and I'm going to give my heart to you forever, or until I die, right? And an act like that could communicate that if taken well, right? But obviously it was taken as like, you're saying I'm a stinky hoe or something. No, I'm not saying that. I'm just, are you aware, right?
That was a long day.
I'm sure it was. So, gosh, that's a hard one.
Use wisdom.
And really, you know, you want to focus on what you're feeling, yeah. too.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to just put it like, that's where I think a lot of times when we talk about stuff like this is we put it on the girl.
Right.
It's your fault, I'm lusting. It's like, look, guys, if women wore like full body garb all the time, right, covering from head to toe, you could still figure out it's a girl. And you will figure out a way, because you know, to admire, to desire, to go, that's a woman. She's beautiful. Right? That's not the solution. So we don't need to put this weight on girls. Like, y'all need to always dress just so, because what's just so? What is that just so? But, ladies, you need to be aware of the effect you have. You need to be aware of the effect you have. Guys like girls. We do, right? We're hardwired. We see you and we go, wow. That's how God made us. So there's tension there. There always will be. But yeah, wisdom. And if you're moving towards marriage with someone, that's probably an appropriate conversation to have with them. But yeah, just kind of be aware. Even if you do have that conversation, you could build some intimacy and get maybe other people involved in it. You know, if you're a 15, 16, 17-year-old student and you're not about to get married. Yes?
Who's the best, who would be a good person, a role in your life to, address when you're thinking, when you're talking about your relationship with somebody?
Yeah.
A third person.
I'm super old-fashioned of, I wish that dads were there, because in the scriptural, you look at, the scriptural whole thing, is, your dad, ladies, is, your protector. For example, in the Old Covenant, if you broke away from your parents and went and had sex with someone and you weren't married, they would bring that woman back to your house. If they had enough witnesses and it was proven true, they would bring that your daughter back to your house and they would stone her dead at your feet. And what are they saying?
It's your fault.
Partly your fault. You did not love your daughter well. You did not help her to see that, she's uniquely cherished and loved by you as a dad, and keep her from being manipulated by another man, keep her from being whatever it is, right? So ideally, to say dad is a great person, he should know and care about your soul and your body and everything you're doing. Now, this, in all times and all places, dads, because we're sons of Adam, we suck. We are checked out. We're probably addicted to porn ourselves or struggling, and we don't know how to deal with it. And so sometimes we're not available. We're not there. There's grace for that. Jesus loves our dads. So your mom? For girls, that can be kind of hard. You may be clashing with your mom right now, which is a sign that it's time to grow up and move out and become your own mom, maybe. I don't know. Right? Or I think some of the best resources are just an older lady in the faith who is wise, right? Who you can trust. You can give them your fine jewelry, your fine china, which is your emotional, your stuff, right? You can give that to them, and they're going to handle it well. They're going to shoot straight with you. They're going to love you well, but also they need to be giving you the grace of God. If they're giving you legalistic advice and saying things like, this will help you not struggle anymore, maybe trade that mentor in. Go to the mentor store and be like, I'm putting her back. Is there another one I can have? So, does that make sense? Is that good? I don't know that most of us at this age, I didn't have a friend who's the same age who is mature enough. Maybe you do. I'm not going to make black and white spell out of these things, but maybe there is someone who loves you that enough and can kind of guide you through that, but somebody older and wiser is good. All right. Good job, guys. Good questions. See y'all tomorrow. We'll wrap it up.